The Liar Contacts of Professor Hernandez in the 70s, Part 9. From the addendum in the book. An invitation from Liar. From several notes made in November 1979. For many months, almost 14, Professor Hernandez and I. Suppose that means Zephyr Rodriguez. Rune remark. Had been conversing at length about his experiences, in which the principal protagonist was an extraterrestrial woman. I showed a really genuine interest in his accounts. To me, it seemed a fantastic story, really incredible. As director of the magazine, I had access to many UFO cases, but none as interesting as this one. I believed it, though I had some doubts. Within me, I felt that the professor was telling me no truth, and one reason why I say this is that it would be so illogical, since he desired no publicity, no fame, no money, nor any other material benefit, as with others with whom I have dealt. This inspired me to continue studying his case. Sometimes I noticed that he would show fear when speaking of some things concerning Liar. That was logical. He had received a great emotional shock, which I believe the true contactees can understand, and what I say here. Whoever has had an experience of this type, suffers an emotional change. At first, after that first encounter with Liar at the university, the professor felt really surprised when she tried to communicate telepathically with him. He felt that he had received certain messages, though he could not be certain where they came from. His research work advanced surprisingly, thanks to many of the formulas that were seen to be improved with opinions that came from him, without his comprehending how or why. He heard formulas in his mind, but he did not at first relate that to the visits of the strange extraterrestrial women. We conversed at length about the possibility and the ideal means by which the professor could send information to the great powers, advising of his experiences with Liar. We knew that many crazies had been sending letters of pacification to Russia and the United States, but we did not know how they were going to react to the information that he had. Sometimes he and I had questioned things that Liar had said, but he never had doubts about the existence of this woman and her extraterrestrial origin. To insistence, he one day promised to take me to meet her, but I thought it was only a promise to pacify me and nothing else. Nevertheless, he had asked Liar if I could come and meet her personally. She told him yes, but that they did not show themselves to the world, because at international levels nobody would believe it, and if they began to do so, they would try to capture them, and to examine them and attempt to analyze their blood, organs and circulation, but that they, she and her friends, were disposed to no more terrestrial beings on a peaceful basis. The professor did not tell me of any preparation, because, according to him, he himself did not prepare, not even at a mental level, although this was a form of communication with him. We agreed that on the next occasion I would go with him to meet Liar. I asked, "Where is the place?" "How would I go?" I asked. "I will take you," he said. At that time, October and November 1979, I had a great deal of work at the publishing house, and I soon forgot my promise to him. Up to now all was going well. During that lapse of time we only saw each other 2 or 3 days due to his having to go to the zone of silence to make a report. When he returned, he said that he wanted to remind me of our appointment with Liar. I felt a kind of curiosity. Finally, I was going to meet an extraterrestrial woman. I thought that as a journalist, I might be able to convert this into a contact. What should I do? Now I was on the level of the professor. What would happen? As the day approached for my possible encounter with Liar, I began to feel a kind of uneasiness. Frequently in the evening, I would think very deliberately about that. What was happening to me? Did I really want to meet Lia out of curiosity, or only to unmask the professor? I did not know, but I began to feel an unprecedented fear. I felt very bad. I wanted to go, but I refused to take part in that meeting. If a man of the valor and the integrity of the professor had experienced changes in his personality, could I resist that? The day arrived and the professor called me early to remind me of the appointment. He was very sure the two of us would go together. He was really quite sure that I would accompany him. The night before, I had not been able to sleep. I was really terrified. I never knew why, but toward morning I stuck my head out the window and upon looking at the moon and the stars, I felt my heart beating with great force. I felt an undefined emotion. I was not emotionally prepared for such an encounter. I began to think of those who had disappeared and whose disappearances on many occasions was attributed to the UFOs. For that reason, when he called me to tell me that he was coming for me at 5 o'clock, I refused, arguing that I had too much work. The professor then said to me, "I asked Lia if you could come with me to meet her personally, because you want to see if what I have been telling you is true." She answered me, "It is well, you may bring her, but I do not think she wants to come." That surprised me a great deal. Lia knew that I would not come. Had she provoked this psychological ill feeling? Was I not prepared for such an encounter? I had no answer to my questions. The professor had told me that many people could contact them, the ETs. Their advances do not damage us, and many times they have placed their sciences at the service of whomever, like the professor, become their friends. Their space travels do not endanger us. Many of us, through some subconscious fear, refuse to accept friendship with beings from other worlds, and this fear impedes their coming to have a coherent relationship. I have interviewed other extraterrestrial contactees. Those who really have had some kind of contact experienced a certain fear. That depended on the nature of the contact, on whether it had been involuntary or friendly, or if there had only been silent contact. The professor had already had to confront the problem of a special encounter, and above all had to struggle against himself to believe it. I simply had to remember that I was afraid of the unknown, and I believe that fear is an obstacle by which we terrestrials do not come to accept, as it should be, the presence of those beings. When I told my elder brother about this, he reproached me as a coward, and still today I regret not having gone. 9 years have passed, and it seems that I can return to that time and feel the same ill sensation, only by imagining that I could have been on a spaceship. It is true that my action was incomprehensible, but if you had been in my place, what would you have done? From Chapter 23. We are destroying our own planet. From notes made in November 1975. We continually search the universe, trying to perhaps encounter something else. Is what Lia has told me many times. Day after day, a labyrinth of questions rise in my mind. I have asked her to tell me why my limited capacity for discernment and little receptivity is an obstacle so difficult to overcome. I know that contrary to her desires, she used words incomprehensible and terms that at times I did not understand. Likewise, when she was forced to use or employ simple terms in referring to her technical scientific subjects, the grandness of her knowledge was minimized. According to my deductions, she spoke to me in words most accessible, which could serve to train me, which much facilitated things for me. I began to become accustomed to my training by Lia, at whatever moment, in whatever place she wished. With her, today, when I saw her at the UNAM, University of Mexico. Walking toward the cafeteria, there was absolutely nothing strange. I knew that she could accomplish almost anything she desired, and I believe that up to then, she had become a part of my life. I stopped her when I caught up with her. Hey! Point! Pointy! I exclaimed. I have many questions to ask you. I said without stopping to think of the necessity of protocol to greet her. I acted spontaneously, without courteously greeting her. She nodded her head affirmatively and looked at me expectantly. We walked toward the outside in the direction of the parking lot. Lia, I said, while we retired from that place, tell me about the uncertain future which day after day I have come to comprehend from all your conversations. Show me that which will come in a form inevitably destructive to assault our planet. Listen, Professor, the terrestrials demonstrate decadent tendencies, nevertheless the Malority live in a period of transition. That is to say, of changes, of metamorphosis. The galactic community simply observes when only you can resolve the internal affairs. It is the respect of free will, of the liberty to act. Point. It is a form of living, though that could be disputed, that is respected. Nevertheless, you are gaining, if that is what you want, and they demonstrate access to great intergalactic knowledge. However, contrary to that which you hoped for your community, the terrestrials demonstrate clear tendencies to decline. The decline of this civilization began some time ago. As thinking beings, you began to incur this in your own species. In only one century, you have carried out sufficient nuclear tests that, because of which, for the next 200 years, your humanity will be exposed to radioactive residues from explosions in different parts of your planet. Unfortunately, this is one of the more important reasons why you are losing your ozone layer. By the 1980s you will have lost a total of 8.3% of the ozone layer that originally was found at the beginning of this century. This will provoke the solar race to stimulate the molecules of all living organisms to their maximum level. This will also make many of the viruses that assault the terrestrials reach their optimum resistance. This cause of the destruction of the protective ozone layer surrounding our planet was also pointed out in ET contacts in Switzerland in 1975, before we were even aware of any loss ourselves, and in 1976 in ET contacts in Minnesota. Other ETs making contact in other countries have pointed out the same problem for us. Nevertheless, this will exercise a major stimulation of the cerebral neurons, which contributes to the acceleration of the neurophysical changes in the humanity of your world. The memory and the intelligence will be the first cerebral zones to show sensible changes. This will transform the character of each individual, according, of course, to the resistance of each one. The changes will sharpen, whether they are positive or negative, but your own tendencies will always become more acute. The grade of abnormal neuroses will rise noticeably. As a consequence, your aggressiveness will increase, and the percentage will rise day by day and month by month. Characteristics will increase, and intelligence will be accentuated, but also said stimulations will generate decadence in the individual as such. Although it seems to you sometimes that this could benefit humanity, it will prejudice him greatly in genetic order. He will become susceptible to diseases for which there are no known treatments. Respiratory ailments and neurological illnesses will be one form of organic abnormality by the end of the 1980s. After that will come all kinds of degenerative sicknesses. The births of genetically malformed beings will accelerate. The human race suddenly will be confronted by changes in genes, of DNA in mutation. Many species of animals will have disappeared, others will show mutations, and still others will have lost the characteristics of their race. This will show you that, thanks to the indiscriminate use of nuclear tests and the dangerous contaminants that poison the water and the air, the race is suffering mutations. Some of the greatest tragedies of humanity began because of circumstances that seemed ingenious and inoffensive at the time. Because of that, upon analyzing the effects over time, we must first observe the experience which gives us a retrospective view of the past. Much of that which has been done in the areas of science has resulted in death to humanity. The accidents which have occurred in nuclear plants, and those which will occur in the future, contribute still more to sensitive loss of the ozone. What? Have there been more nuclear accidents? I asked in surprise. Yes, Professor. And for this also there are many reasons. In the first place, you still are not capable of beneficial use of nuclear energy without problems, threats, and dangers to your civilization. There are risks. The movements of ground, such as landslides and earthquakes, though slight, endanger the plants. This should make man think, and know, that his habitat is not adaptable to plants of this kind. But, point, wait. The loss of ozone increases the temperature, or diminishes it according to the case. This will easily affect the nuclear plants. No, Professor, you still are not capable for that. It also influences the external movement of the planet. Moreover, the pressures of gravitational change from that date began to increase, which could also put the nuclear plants in danger, as well as other important things. Someone needs to stop this, because the result in the future will bring unacceptable damage to humanity. Man, despite his advance, his intelligence, his desire to overcome the barriers of his habitat beyond the atmospheric level which surrounds your planet, opens a great highway towards his own destruction. It is imperative to open a breach toward more knowledge, physical and moral, of the terrestrial being. He has degraded the water, a liquid of optimum excellence, not only on your planet, but in all the universe. He has dirted his planet, has destroyed hundreds of thousands of living beings, animals, plants and rivers, lakes and oceans contaminated by man, not to mention his absolute lack of respect not only shown toward those others, but manifested toward himself. There will come a time in which any energy of your world will have a cost much less than that of water. Your world is slowly being converted into a place inappropriate for life. We desire to sound an alarm at once, exposing several reasons. Starvation is not a sentence. It is only the result of world disorganization. You have not dutifully capitalized the goods of the earth. There is indignity, ambition, pride and arrogance. You manipulate entire populations, blackmailing them with grains and greens. It is time that you begin to enjoy a true peace in your world. It is time to show the intergalactic humanity that you also have the right to life and knowledge, but this you must authentically earn. Listen, Professor, if today you could take a step backward and stop the nuclear advances in only those which are employed in the use of risky chemical combinations, your terrestrial community would have made an important change and thus one step toward survival. The scientists argue that to stop science is to stop the world, but that is not true. You cannot feel pride in a science that values only its arsenals of deadly weapons.